From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Today on Newsmakers, we're learning about the history of Black people in the surrounding region all across our listening area. In particular, we're talking to several participants from the Enduring Families Project. It's a group that presents and films biographical reenactments of Black historical figures from the La Crosse area and surrounding area as well. Joining us are Denise Christie Moss, Dodie Whitaker, Walf C. Pierre, and Lakeisha Hudson, and I'm very happy to have all of them. We'll hear from all of them eventually, but let's start with you, Denise. You're the producer. You're an actor. You're one of the driving forces behind the Enduring Families Project. Tell me about how this initiative got started.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for having us.
Certainly.
And, it's always a pleasure to toot our horns about the Enduring Families Project. It's a project that took several years in the making. Our historian, Rebecca Mormon Krieger, had this idea to dramatize certain stories, Wisconsin stories. It started in Milwaukee, and then when both she and I moved out here to the area, it sort of morphed into finding stories about African Americans that lived in the La Crosse area and its surrounding area. Thanks to her research, we were able to put together stories in the very beginning and tell the stories of four families in a bus tour. We were able to tell the stories of one family that was here from one of the oldest families here, the Moss family. We were also able to tell the story of George Pogue, for whom there is a park named after him. There was another, we were also able to tell the story of George Edwin Taylor, who we found out through research was the first African-American to run for president, who spent his life, his childhood in La Crosse and the West Salem area. And then we were able to tell the story of Ashley and Ellen Shivers, who were barbers in the area also. So it started with those four stories on a bus tour throughout downtown La Crosse. And it really gravitated. Once the first four stories were introduced to the community, we got more interest from school districts. We did a presentation at Onalaska High School and then a presentation at the La Crosse for the middle schools of the school district of La Crosse. Eventually, we were able to give presentations for various, the La Crosse Public Library, West Salem Historical Society, Holman Historical Society. So we've really gravitated, and what started out as four stories has morphed into 11 stories. It took some time to get there, but the stories have grown, the participants grew, and we're very grateful for the knowledge that we've been able to generate from all this information.
So you talked about those four stories where the origin kind of came from, and now it's grown into 11 stories and hopefully even more in the future. What's it like to see, not only to see work that you've put in come to fruition like this, but for it to be embraced to the extent that you're able to do even more?
I'm amazed that it's very gratifying to learn that the community wants to hear more about this information. This is newfound history that our historian brought to fruition. And in all honesty, it's this information that Rebecca used came from one of her primary sources was a book by Dr. Bruce Mauser. He was a professor emeritus at UW La Crosse, and he wrote a document called Black La Crosse, Wisconsin, 1850 to 1906. So learning this information wasn't new. The book has been around for quite a while, but this was the first time the information came to the public in the form of dramatic reenactments. So we took the information that was compiled and dramatized it. And on the bus tour, we were able to take people to locations where these people had worked and lived, and that brought those characters to life. And I think bringing the history alive really had had a lot to do with the gravitation of the public to the to the work.
It makes it so tangible. It makes it really, really tangible, doesn't it? When you can ride around in a bus, or some of the things I saw in conjunction with the Juneteenth celebration last summer, there were actors in these different locations around downtown, and I walked around and saw them, and it's just so interesting when you're seeing real people in a real context. Talking about these things, it just comes alive in a way that it doesn't in a book, or especially in an old dusty document in the back of a library somewhere.
This is where it happened. You know, you walk down Second and Pearl, and that's where it happened. Or maybe there's more appreciation for Nathan Hill. That's where the first African-American president spent his childhood, was right on Nathan Hill, right down the road from a Woodman's grocery store. It sort of brings bringing the history to life. That's what it's all about. But it is just a snapshot. There is a ton more information available about these stories, and it's available. Our historian put together a link that is available to those who are interested, particularly libraries and school districts. And the link to all of those primary documents that she spent so much time putting together, you can have access to that link by connecting with our website, which is connected to the website of our fiscal sponsor, which is the La Crosse County Historical Society. And if you connect on that link, you can find access. You can gain access to the link because there is so much more information. This is just the tip of the iceberg. The history is new, and there's so much more to learn. So
I want to bring in a couple of our other participants. We've been listening to Denise Christie Moss, who is the producer of the Enduring Families Project and one of its actors as well. Several other members of the company are here with us: Wolf Stepierre, Lakeisha Hudson, and Dodie Whitaker. And Dodie, you've been on the program before, and we've talked to you about some of the acting and everything that you've done elsewhere in your life as a resident of the area, and as a person whose family has been involved in the civil rights movement in various ways, as we've heard on this program before, how did you first find out that Denise and others were working on a project like this, and how did you get involved?
So that's actually a really good question. As you mentioned, it's in my background to not only be kind of seeking out theatrical opportunities, and I'm a trained singer, opera singer, and you know, I've just kind of performing has always been in my blood, as well as activism. And my dad is an historian and a civil rights leader, and this is right up my alley. But actually, this is a very obscure thing. Both Denise and I do international folk dance, and that's how we met.
Dancing
in the international folk dance.
Fantastic. I love
very
it.
Very small. Yeah. So I started dancing when I was, I think, 11, it was a tradition at my summer camp in rural Michigan. I'm not sure what Denise's story is, but between that and also we both love to sing early music, Renaissance music. And so we kind of met that way. And then kind of fortuitously, I was doing more work in La Crosse. I lived down in Viroqua, so it's a little bit of a trek for me. I was teaching a couple of days a week at Western Tech. And right around that time, Denise said, you know, you're an actor, right? Would you be interested in doing this? And then it all just kind of fell into place. And I just immediately felt like, wow, what a wonderful project and what a great community. It really just my friend group and just my activities have really expanded just from, you know, this kind of small project that became such an amazing thing for La Crosse. And again, I'm not from Wisconsin at all. Just learning these stories and this history has really kind of opened up a lot of curiosity that I have of other areas. We've looked into Viroqua a little bit. I know Winona, Minnesota has a really similar history, and a lot of these untold stories. So as you said, it's just an incredible way of bringing these to life for folks. And anytime I describe the project to people, they just kind of light up like, wow, what a cool thing. You know, and it's so accessible. And kind of seems pretty simple, but at the same time, yeah, there's a lot that's gone into it. And I'm really just admiring of the folks that, you know, have been able to make it be what it is. Also really exciting to have more of the female characters come out, I think.
Simple, but impactful and such an opportunity for people to be involved creatively. Another one of the actors involved is Walfsty Pierre, who also joins us. Walfsty, talk about your beginnings with the Enduring Families Project. How did you hear about it?
It was a perfect opportunity for Denise, I would say, because I think it was one of the meetings that I had with, I was at a meeting for Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. And Denise showed up, and everyone already knew what Denise was there for, because Denise is just like everyone. If you meet them, you're like, okay, do you know Denise? Oh, she hasn't approached you yet. So she's just going around and just approaching everyone. Hey, we have this project here and we need some actors. And we're just looking, and she was just talking to the group about it. And I was telling Denise, you know, it's been a long time since I've acted up. Since I've done a play, I'm not great at it. And then when she started telling me about the role of the person that it is, oh yeah, he was a farmer and he was a foster parent. And I'm like, that's right down my alley, because I'm a social worker. I like kids and I want to foster kids. And so she, at that time, I'm like, okay, I'll show me the script and I'll look at it. And I think from that time, Denise started meeting with me and going over the script. We were meeting like almost weekly, Denise, she was helping with the script, and I fell in love with it because he had so much, Nathan Smith had so much character. He had so much good that he's done before he passed away. And I'm one of those people that I feel like, hey, if you could do as much good as possible in the world before you pass away and leave that legacy behind, that's great. How do you want to remember? Do you want to be remembered for someone that took care of a lot of people? Because you took care of that person, and that person's going to take care of the next person. So you just impacting so many lives with just helping that one person. And I think Nathan Smith, when I was reading the monologue and reading all the information about him, I felt like he was that type of person that impacted one person and then impacted so many after that.
And hopefully we'll learn more about Nathan Smith and the other characters whom the four of you have portrayed as our show goes on. We haven't heard yet from Lakeisha Hudson, and I want to make sure that we hear from Kish before we go to our first break. Talk about your involvement with the project. Walfsty says Denise has been show up everywhere asking people to be part of it. Tell me how you got involved.
This is very true. So I actually became involved in the project through the president of Black. He kind of passed my name along to Denise. following my participation in Xanadu at the theater downtown. So she definitely will approach you if you have any kind of acting skill or if you have any kind of desire to act. So ever since then, I've been committed because I just think that it's really a good cause. I do enjoy being a part of it. So that's kind of how I got involved in it. And it's just been amazing. Like, just like Dodie said, it opens up, you know, a whole new world of friends and connections and stuff. So, yeah.
What's it like being part of this historical reenactment and knowing that you are part of what's bringing these histories alive for the current generation of people?
Honestly, I didn't know it would be as big as it is. When we talk about it to different people, especially people that don't know anything about it, they're like amazed that this is actually happening. Like my job, when they found out about it, they were willing to, like, they would print things out. Like when we would do things in the community, they would print it out and hang it up at work. And you know, so, I mean, it's just become like a really big thing in the community. And I mean, it feels kind of good, like, you know, playing such a major part in history, you know, bringing history to life. So,
well, we're going to learn more about that as our program goes on. We're learning all about the Enduring Families Project today on Newsmakers. Tell me about the history of your family. When did they come to Western Wisconsin? What parts of your historical culture are still important to you? I'd love to hear from you about that, or really about anything else that's on your mind. You can email us at newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. And during our winter member drive, of course, we're reminding you that listener support makes everything you enjoy on WPR possible. We know you value Newsmakers and all the other WPR programs, so you can make your contribution right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift is so important to what we do here. Thank you very much. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall from our studios on the campus of UW-La Crosse. We're talking today about a project that dedicates itself to preserving the histories of African Americans in the La Crosse area and beyond. It's called the Enduring Families Project. Now, I want to talk, we've heard from all of the people who are joining us today, and I want to talk to each of them, though, about the characters that they're portraying. And let's start with Dodie Whitaker, who portrays Burletta Walden Loving. Dodie, tell me all about Burletta.
Burletta is actually the second character that I've played. I played Elizabeth Burt previous to that. And then Denise approached me. She said, I have this new character for you. One of the things that is very is unique about Burletta is that she's multiracial in terms of her racial makeup and also kind of background and how her family ended up in this area. And I'm biracial, so we thought that might be just kind of a neat connection. She was part of kind of a wagon train of folks that came up, well, obviously from the South, but was traveling with kind of a multiracial, multi-generational group of folks. And then they ended up in Cheyenne Valley near Hillsboro. So, and my character, Burletta, was a twin and came up as, I think her family was her grandparents and her parents, and they all traveled again. There were 11 families. That's how many there were that came up from Indiana. I found it. 1850. And then They were actually the first children born in Cheyenne Valley. So they came up in around 1850, and then Berletta and my twin sister Armetta were both born in 1856. And we were the first of the Waldens to be born in this area.
What have you been able to learn from playing these characters and from learning about their lives and their families?
You know, I think one of the things that is so kind of rich, again, about these stories is that you really just get a sense of their families and who, you know, really that kind of endurance, the resilience of the folks, you know, our ancestors who were able to, you know, make a better life for themselves. And also, I think my character attended the August Ball, and you may learn about a little bit more about that. That's a kind of a big theme in a lot of the stories. And in terms of just that it really just paints this picture of this rich, colorful social life that the folks created for themselves during that time. And then another theme that runs through a lot of these monologues in terms of family is this kind of extended family of, like, there are kids who, you know, they necessarily didn't make it with their families, or, you know, a lot of people would get sick and die during that time, of course. And how this community really supported the children and supported people who weren't necessarily, you know, blood, but in terms of, like, saying, we've got to take care of these children. So a lot of this kind of mentorship, and also just this awareness of keeping the future, you know, keeping these family lines going, but also this community. Those are themes that really run through and I think really bring these characters to life.
That's Dodie Whittaker talking about her character, Berletta Walden Loving. Denise Christy Moss, you play Lillian Smith Davenport. Tell me about Miss Davenport.
Lillian Smith Davenport was born in La Crosse in the late 1890s, 1893, 1894. She was the youngest of four children. Her mother and her sister ran a successful catering service, and they catered one of the early August balls that was held in La Crosse in 1887. So Lillian's mother and sister were connected to the August ball. Lillian graduated from La Crosse High School, which has later been renamed Central High School, in 1913. And then she went on to La Crosse Normal School, which has been renamed University of Wisconsin La Crosse. And she was a music major, and she graduated from what is now UWL in 1917. For a time, she was a music teacher in one of the schools in La Crosse, but then she decided to become a professional musician, and she became very successful in vaudeville. She was an arranger in addition to a singer, instrumentalist. She got lots of excellent reviews from a newspaper, Chicago-based, the Chicago Defender, which was a newspaper that whose target audience was the African-American community. So their events were about things going on in the African-American community. So a lot of her reviews were very positive from the Chicago Defender. For the most part, one time she did decide to get politically active in 1941, just before the U.S. entered World War II. She was in La Crosse doing a gig, a performance, and saw signs in the windows of restaurants and hotels saying the effect was no colored solicitation allowed. And she saw these signs in the window saying, we're not going to do any business with people of color. And she went to the NAACP to get those signs removed. And the signs were removed, which is good. I don't know, you know, people are still going to think what they think. But, you know, she that was one time that she got politically active. After retirement from vaudeville, she settled in Chicago and once again returned to teaching music in the Chicago public schools, passed away in 1964 at the age of 69. She and her entire family are buried at Oak Grove Cemetery right here in La Crosse. So she has very strong ties in life and in death to the La Crosse area. So again, that's a snapshot, as are all of these snapshots. There's a lot more information, but that gives you an indication of what she was about.
That's very interesting. And you talked about her being being politically active, at least to the extent of making an effort to get those negative signs taken out of those businesses and to put pressure on those businesses to remove that, at least that official discrimination. As you mentioned, there's no telling what the operators of those businesses privately maintained or not. And you talked previously about one of the characters that the Enduring Families Project has portrayed being a presidential candidate, which is very interesting. What else do we know about the political involvement of Black people from the La Crosse area in that time? I know in other parts of the country, you hear about all kinds of discrimination, official segregation, and then sometimes unofficial, but discrimination nonetheless. What do we know about the extent to which some of these characters were allowed to be involved politically or decided to be involved politically?
George Edwin Taylor, before he ran for president in 1904, had a newspaper called the Wisconsin Advocate. And it was located in the old Wettstein furniture store. And the paper was a champion of workers' rights, but later on a champion of civil rights. The paper did not last very long because the newspaper office was trashed. The August ball that I referred to earlier was in 1887. George Edwin Taylor wrote an article about the August ball, and he put it in the Wisconsin Advocate in 1887. It's after that the newspaper office was trashed. And so he had to, he moved away first to Iowa, later on got more and more politically active elsewhere. It's really interesting that there was some negativity there. One of the characters in several of the characters, I think Kish's character is one, where they say that in the scene that she does with her husband, who is Zachariah Moss, they talk about having part of their home open for out-of-towners, because the people, if out-of-towners who were people of color came to La Crosse, the hotels would not welcome them. And so Kish's character says that we always opened a portion of our homes so that out-of-towners would have a place to stay. That was the practice for a lot of the African-American residents in town. They always had a portion of their homes for people from out of town, because they knew that they would have hassles, problems with getting with lodging and meals. So that can sort of give you an idea of what the political climate was. But it's interesting, this August ball that we keep bringing up was a celebration of liberation. It was a celebration of the liberation first of enslaved people in Haiti, and then after the Civil War, a celebration of liberation of enslaved people here. And it was sometimes called an Emancipation Ball, but it was always held on August 1st. So that's why it's called the August Ball. But I just want to give some context of what the August Ball was, because we keep throwing the term out, and that's some background about it.
I'm glad you did, because I was about to plead ignorance. I didn't know about it. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Let's talk to you. You mentioned Kisha's character, Lakeisha Hudson. Tell me about the character that you portray, Emma Walden Moss.
Emma was born in Cheyenne Valley in 1862. She came with her family from Indiana. They moved to La Crosse in about 1897. Her and Zach, her husband, she married Zach in about 1897, and they moved to La Crosse. She had a sister who married Ashley Shivers, I believe. And her character, her husband was a barber. So he had a barber shop over on State Street, on Pearl Street, between 2nd and 3rd. He had three chairs. He hired two other barbers, a porter, a boot black. And again, like she said, like our characters, like were so much like us in real life, because the character Zachariah, he is actually, the person who portrays him is actually a barber. And so my character, like, was involved, like, with the community circles, the circles at the church, and I'm involved in the church. So, like, it just seemed like our characters were perfectly picked for us, because, yeah, I didn't know. At first, I didn't know why she had picked me, and I didn't know how much she knew about, you know, who I was. But, like, the characters kind of just came together, and it was like, our lives were so closely connected to the characters that we portray. So
that's interesting. You mentioned that, because virtually everyone who is on this program today has talked about some way in which they are able to closely relate to their character on a personal level because of their own experiences. And it reminds me that throughout history, and one of the reasons that we were talking about how these tangible reenactments rather than something written in a book or something like that, not that that's not valuable, but these tangible reenactments really connects you to the humanity of characters throughout history. And it reminds you that no matter how many years removed we are, we really are all connected to each other and our circumstances. There's always something in somebody else's circumstance that you can find to relate to, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely.
I just wanted to throw in there, there's a lot of connection to Cheyenne Valley. Burletta Walden and Emma Walden were sisters. They were from a family of about, I know it's in the teens, either 13 or 15 kids, but a lot of kids. And I think Emma says at one point that her mother said it was in the water. You know, that's why people multiplied, because, you know, those Burletta and, you know, Kisha's character and Dodie's character were sisters.
Yeah, we were sisters. We had twin brothers and a number of other sisters and brothers. And
so it was in the water.
It was in the water. And yeah, I also wanted to mention that, yeah, I'd mentioned that I'm biracial, black and white, but that this family had Cherokee and Lummi Indian and all sorts of indigenous connections. And and then they all ended up in Cheyenne Valley, and then they all mostly ended up in La Crosse.
One thing that Dodie mentioned, Cheyenne Valley. Cheyenne Valley was a tri-racial area just outside of Hillsboro. And that the residents were African American, Native American, European indentured servants whose time was done, Native Americans, and then fugitive, and then later on freed enslaved people who found their way to this network. And Cheyenne Valley was one of the first areas in Wisconsin to have interracial schools, interracial churches, interracial sports teams, at a time when being interracial in other parts of the area of the country could get you hung or killed. But here in Wisconsin, you had this community that got along. And so that's one important thing about Cheyenne Valley.
I just wanted to mention I'm remembering a very interesting something that I didn't know about with my character. I think Kish mentioned that there were some marriage ties to the Shivers, and I think there was this community was made up of these different families that Denise is a part of, the Moss family and the Lovings, which was my part of the family. But we had also lived in Sparta for a while, where there were these Turkish baths, and it was a very popular place for people to come for spa vacations. And I had no idea that was a thing in Sparta.
So, who doesn't want to go to a spa in Sparta, right? It is. Exactly. It's the first three letters of the town's name, after all.
There you go. Yes, no ties to Greece at all, but definitely spas. And also just that thread of entrepreneurship. Is so vivid.
It's also interesting, I've got to squeeze in one more break here, and we still have to hear from Wolfsey about his character Nathan Smith, which we'll do right after this timeout. If you would like to get in touch with the show about a future topic, or if you want to send us a note about what we're talking about today, we would welcome your interaction with us. Our email is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. And of course, you can find our archive at wpr.org/newsmakers. And as you've no doubt heard by now, it's our winter member drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You can learn more about that, make your donation, become a sustaining member, and see what thank you gifts we can send your way, all at wpr.org or by calling 888-202-2552. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios. Our conversation about the Enduring Families Project continues. We're talking to Dodi Whitaker, Wolfsey Pierre, Lakeisha Hudson, and Denise Christie Moss. Wolfsey, I haven't heard about your character yet, at least from you. I've driven by this sign in West Salem announcing Nathan Hill, and I did not know the history I did not know the history of Nathan Smith until I saw your portrayal of him in a video conference that you were involved with, I think with the La Crosse Public Library and some others a year or so ago, and I was just intrigued about this incredibly interesting character. Tell us about Nathan Smith.
Nathan Smith was, it fit really well with my character as well, too. I always felt that I was like a very nice person, but appears like really a bigger guy that's very nice. So he was a gentle giant from what I've heard. And he had a kind heart, and he offered his home for many people. So the backstory behind it is that Nathan Smith was born on a plantation. And came in 1820, and he and his wife Sarah, fled the plantation, and during the height of the Civil War, and they arrived in La Crosse County in 1864. So, how they got here was they didn't originally land it on La Crosse, but they were working with the doing the underground railroad. While they were traveling, they were able to meet Major General Cadwalader Washburn, and he was Denise, I think, would call him a coachman. He worked for them. He worked for them, and at that time, they invited him over to move to the La Crosse area when they moved there, and he was able to help them secure finances to buy 40 acres of land. So right between, if anyone haven't been there, it's right between Onalaska and West Salem. And I had to, like, when Denise told me about this, the hill, because I didn't know about it before until Denise told me about Nathan Hill, Nathan Smith. And then I had to drive by the hill and to see it. And I'm like, oh, here's the sign. And I've even asked people about it. Like, they're like, well, it used to be called a different name before they changed to Nathan Hill. So, so this is where he lived and with his wife. And he took in a lot of foster kids. And not only that, he also took in older adults that, you know, had intellectual disability that their families could no longer care for them. So he took in children, adults, and he and his wife just cared for them. And then majority of the kids that he took care of, they were kids that were, you know, in the foster care system, or they were either in trouble with the law. And one of those young men that he took in was George Edwin Taylor. And and he took care of him, and he made sure that he got everything that he needed. He should teach him hard work. All the people that work, that live with him, they all learn about hard work. They all learn about education was important. Hard work was important. And George Edwin Taylor was one of them that was able to move on to life and enroll. And he sent four of the five boys to college at Wayland College in Beaver Dam. So George Edwin Taylor became, you know, he ran for president in 1904. He was a civil rights activist. So he was like out of all the boys that he took care of, he felt like that was his pride and joy in George Edwin Taylor, because he went out and did a lot of stuff and took all the hard work and everything that he learned from Nathan to just put that out in society and show it. And that's why earlier today I said, you know, like, you can make that impact of one person and it just multiply. And I feel like that's how I feel like my work, my duty is, like, as a social worker, that one child that I can work with, you never know that one child that you will work with and how much impact it can lead into the next generation or the next person. Because right now, we're talking about Nathan Smith. He was a farmer. And and we are talking about him now years and years later because of the impact that he had on so many of the kids that he took in and took care of, and the adults as well, too. So he was able to live on the farm until his wife passed away. And then he did end up passing away at age 85 in 1905. That was the year after George Edwin Taylor ran for president. So he got to see, like, good stuff happen. Like, he, you know, he saw the seed, he planted the seed and able to see that tree grow, and he passed away after that.
So he got to see the kid that he influenced. I mean, one of his kids, really, you know, not his biological child per se, but one of his kids ran for president, and he got to watch that. That's amazing. And you, as a social worker, you must know what that feels like to see someone that you have worked so hard to influence and invested and poured so much of yourself into go on to accomplish something, to overcome an obstacle.
Yeah, that is correct. And also, I failed to mention that, you know, part of why they did what they did is they had two kids that they had to leave behind when they ran away from the plantation. They had two little girls that they wish they could have take back with them. They could have take with them, but it was just too dangerous out there. So they left them with friends, and they were hoping that they would be able to go back and, like, they would be able to pay for their freedom later. Like, they would work and pay their freedom later, because they didn't know how the world was functioning, but they were hoping that they would make some money to buy their freedom after.
That's Walt Stipierre. He portrays Nathan Smith in the Enduring Families Project, various videos and different presentations. Denise Christie Moss is the producer of the Enduring Families Project. So one of the things that you're working on is a presentation that will have already passed by the time this airs, and it's a presentation that you're doing in conjunction with the La Crosse Public Library. But it's interesting because even though the event will already be passed, people can view this information on your YouTube channel where the video will be archived. So talk about what people will learn if they go find the new video on your YouTube channel.
They will learn about three barbers that had successful businesses in La Crosse, Zachariah Henry Moss and his wife, Emma. They will learn about the business of Lydia Moss, who was a barber, a woman barber, and she had her own business in La Crosse. And they will learn about the life of John Burney and his family. And they also had successful businesses in the barbershop field.
And that's not the only video on your YouTube channel. There's at least a one or two dozen videos on your YouTube channel. There's a lot of them, aren't there?
We were able to evolve into giving 11 stories of African Americans who lived in the area and the surrounding area. So thankfully, you'll be able to find more information. You can tune into those stories as we did our best to reenact them. Those you can see. Again, those are snapshots about their story. You can find out more information about them from accessing our website through the Historical Society, and they can put you in touch with a link that can give you much more information about these, in addition to these stories.
And I'll give those two locations. So if you just go to YouTube and search for Enduring Families Project, it'll pop right up. It did for me, and I was able to subscribe very easily. And as for the Historical Society, if you can simply use the search engine and look for La Crosse County Historical Society, or you can go to the website, which is lchshistory.org. And right on the front page there's a link that says Enduring Families. And if you click on that, you'll be right there. So it's pretty easy to find. And like you said, you mentioned the historian, Rebecca Morgan Krieger is your historian. And a lot of the information that she has put together is there on the website.
Absolutely. Rebecca Mormon Krieger.
Krieger. I'm sorry. I mispronounced it.
Yeah. Rebecca Mormon Krieger was our historian, and she wrote most of the monologues and scenes that we were doing, and a lot of so she's the one that collected the research. Most of her work comes from Bruce Mauser's book about Black La Crosse history, 1850 to 1906, excuse me. And there are many other primary documents that she's put together in a link. A lot of it is accessible to libraries and school systems. If you want to enrich your knowledge about this newfound history, you can go to the La Crosse County Historical Society, and they will put you in touch with the link to that information. These stories are tip of the iceberg. They're designed to pique interest. So hopefully your interest can flourish as a result of hearing these stories.
Well, my interest certainly has been piqued, and I grew up in this town, and I didn't know any of these things. And I'm just the last couple of years that I've become familiar with your work has really been an eye-opening experience and a wonderful one. So I definitely thank each of you for being here today. Lakeisha Hudson, Dodie Whitaker, Walt Stipierre, and Denise Christie Moss. Thank you all for being here and for the work that you're doing as part of the Enduring Families Project. I really appreciate it.
You are very welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's been
so interesting, and I hope people listen to this conversation again and do visit the website of the Historical Society and find the Enduring Families Project and the information and the YouTube channel and learn more and more about our wonderfully interesting area and the various people who have made it what it is today. This is, of course, Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. There are multiple ways that you can hear our show every week. We originate on Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. Our program repeats Friday nights at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And of course, we're always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. For producer Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.